I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome on in. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us on KSL News Radio this evening. Yes, much different story, I guess, in that Eastern Conference semifinals as Brooklyn blasted out to a 2-0 lead on the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Bucks, well, they showed up a little bit better tonight. They're leading by 5 currently. But that's not where we're going to start things off here. Scott, it's game 2 tonight right across the street at Vivint Smart Home Arena.
What?
Yes, we're inside the building because it was so cold. We had a little cold front rolled through.
I know, it's going to be 49 tonight.
I'm wearing a flannel shirt. It's like my old Seattle days of return. I'm back in the grunge band. We are kicking off the show, though, with the Deseret News beat writer for the Utah Jazz. Sarah Todd on here with the on the program here with us. It is our 705 Cut.
The Cut at 705. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Jazz taking on the Clippers tonight. Boy, after that game one that was so electrifying, I think everybody's looking forward to see what is going to be the story of game two. Sarah Todd joining us, as I mentioned. Sarah, game one, the 0-for-20 streak of shooting was the thing that got everybody's attention in the first half, and then Donovan Mitchell took over in the second. Charles Barkley said every game is an island in the playoffs. They take on their own personality. They do their own thing. What are we expecting in game two?
Well, I think that we can expect a couple of things that are different. I don't think the Jazz are going to miss, 21 straight shots again in the first quarter. That's a bit of an anomaly. And I don't think that you can expect Kawhi to come out as flat. I mean, they had just played a game 7 coming in and playing in altitude a day later. And Kawhi is the kind of player where he's either laser-focused and he's Terminator 2 and you can't stop him, or he runs out of gas, and we saw that he didn't really have the gas in the tank in game one. I think he's going to be well-rested and come out a lot different in game two.
So basically the Jazz are going to score more points, and Kawhi Leonard's going to score more points. So it's just going to be a higher-scoring game with the same result, right? Is that what we're saying here? So Mike Connolly is out. Did you have something you wanted to comment on that?
Whatever makes you happy.
Well, there's a lot of things that make me happy.
Yeah, just tell Scott the Jazz are going to win.
That's all I care about.
That's all he cares about.
Mike Connolly, is this just a day-to-day thing, or is it? Do you have any insight into when he might be back, and can the Jazz win without him ultimately win this series?
I think that they can win this series. I think definitely it's going to be harder. What we saw in the first game was that a lot of guys really stepped it up. You saw pretty good defense out of Jordan Clarkson and Bojan Bogdanovic. This is not something that you can say through every game that the Jazz have played. Really, really good minutes from Derek Favors. And so you had a lot of people that were really stepping it up in the absence of Conley. If you can get Joe Ingles to play to a higher level and have all of those guys play like they did in game one, the Jazz can absolutely win this without Mike, but it's going to be harder. As far as Mike goes, I think that they want to be careful with him. And, I mean, just the nature of a hamstring injury is fickle already. And so I think that it really depends every day how he's feeling, and it could be different from one day to the next. And I think they are going day by day to just see how it goes.
We're talking with Sarah Todd, covers the Jazz for the Deseret News. NBA Sarah is her handle. I don't know how you – no one's tried to get that handle from you, offer you some dough for that handle yet on Twitter?
No, I own that everywhere. Look NBA that. Sarah, Gmail, NBA Sarah on Instagram, NBA Sarah on Twitter. That's my brand.
There
no
you go. Yeah, but listen, for a price, somebody could roll in some important
well,
Sarah.
There's definitely
somewhere.
A price. Yeah,
there's a price. There's always a price. As we get going on game two, what are you looking forward – or what are you looking for in this game? I mean, Donovan going off for 45, you know, to get 32 of those in the second half. He said he wants to manipulate these games more, and obviously he did that in the second half. How does he do that now, knowing that this is exactly what the Clippers are going to be laser-focused on is the Jazz superstar?
Yeah, I think, first of all, just putting more pressure when he's on defense through the first part of the game is really going to help him out. Not only does that, you know, quiet the Clippers a little bit, but that gives him a little bit of edge, because if the Clippers are having to work hard on offense, then they, you know, they don't have the same amount of energy as they do on defense. And then the other way is, he did it really well in the second half. He just kind of has to get to it earlier, where he's reading the switches and reading the way that the defense is either going to blitz him or come to the side. And again, he did that really well in the second half. If he can kind of read the game a little bit earlier and exploit the way that the Clippers are guarding him, then, I mean, how are you going to stop him?
Blitzing is a football term,
oh, yeah.
By the way.
That's yes. A football deal. Yeah, Scott knows about blitzes. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch your backside on the blitz.
Yeah.
So the Jazz in the first round against Memphis had a really shocking first game loss. And, of course, this was a great come-from-behind victory. How do you think the Jazz respond after winning? You know, clearly it's – They respond well when they lose, but do you see this team having the same fire and intensity and purpose after a win, or are they a team that can kind of let down?
You know, I think that this is a very different Jazz team than what we've seen before. I mean, the attitude and maturity and just the skill set growth of Donovan Mitchell is at a different level. It has been all season than we've seen him ever before, and like I mentioned before, we've seen nearly every guy on the roster raise their intensity through the playoffs. I think that first game, there was a lot going on there. You had a Memphis team. They had absolutely nothing to lose, and they were riding the high of their life coming off of those two play-in wins. And I think that, you know, they're a little bit more calmed down, the Jazz are now, and I think that they really understand what it's going to take. I don't think that we're going to see too many letdowns from here on out. That's not to say that they're going to win every game. That's absolutely possible. But I don't think that we'll see sort of a defensive collapse for an entire quarter. Or, you know,
right,
like we saw them, they shot horribly in that first quarter, missing so many shots in a row, couldn't buy a basket. And, you know, there wasn't a price for that one. But they weren't playing bad on defense. They were defending the ball well. I mean, they were missing so many shots, and they were only down, you know, 7 at the end of that quarter, 13 at the end of half, after shooting like 18% overall in the first quarter. That's really impressive. And so if they can stay engaged on the defensive end, no matter what's happening on offense, the averages are going to even out eventually.
Sarah Todd, the Deseret News, you can follow her byline there. Also, NBA Sarah across all of the things. She owns the brand, so don't mess with her. Now, listen, Sarah, the 18,000 fans are back in the building. Is the media ice cream machine working now?
It is not. It's not even
See?
In the room.
I can't. This is disappointing. This is huge disappointment. All right. Well, we're looking for it. Maybe that's something that comes back in the conference finals. Maybe the NBA finals. Sarah, enjoy the game,
there we
and
go.
We'll be looking forward to your story as well. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, taking the break here. We'll come back. We got more to go on the program. Hey, Sam Farnsworth is going to walk in here into the studio before he goes across the street as well. So we'll take a break. KSL5 Television's Sam Farnsworth. We'll be right back. More to go right here on KSL's Unravel and KSL News Radio.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Curry, And Sam Farnsworth from KSL TV has now joined us. I have a question for you guys.
Yeah, what do you have there?
It's more for Sam. Yes.
Yeah.
So this is a question for you, Sam.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Uh-huh.
I think so.
All right.
So I've got my hand on the buzzer.
Yeah. If I were you, I wouldn't be ready.
This is a thing, and I know Alex believes in this theory here. I'm just curious of your thoughts. So when you're like you're a Jazz fan mm-hmm. or you're a Broncos fan, mm-hmm. and your team that you're watching and cheering for, they are not playing well.
Mm-hmm. I think I know where you're going.
What do you do in this situation? Do you walk away? Do you stick it out?
There's a real answer there. I'm waiting to see if you get the right answer.
What is it that you do in that situation?
So I'll preface it by saying, having been in this career long enough, I've been able to successfully, to a point, separate my emotions from my fandom a little bit. Not 100%, but a little bit.
I'm not talking about when you're at work.
Right.
When you're watching.
You're there with your kids watching the game on TV.
You can't have your cake and eat it too.
Right. Okay. So let me tell you.
It's got to be one or the other.
So if I can tell you, if my team's doing well that I'm watching and I'm cheering for, it's like I don't even move. I stay in the exact same spot I'm sitting in. Or I remember watching a game several years ago. I won't say what game it is because I'm trying to not express too much of my fan colors here. Yeah. But I remember watching a game several years ago when I live in Colorado, and I stepped into my living room, turned on the TV, started watching the game, and almost immediately there was a really good play. And so I stood there for an entire football game in my living room.
So you're watching the Broncos.
Didn't move.
Broncos Seahawks Super Bowl.
And,
what was that?
No, it wasn't that.
Wasn't a good play for you guys, by
Tuesday
the way.
Tuesday night, my kids were up very late. They're out of school now. They don't care. And I was getting a little irritated because the Jazz weren't playing well. And I'm like, guys, you guys
go to bed.
You all need to go to bed right now.
This is so late. And how dare you? If the Jazz are up by 20, you're like, everybody, popcorn.
Exactly.
Let's get going.
Exactly. So that was kind of the situation. But they ended up sticking it out, and it was a good night, a good memory for us.
So you'll hang in there with the team when they're playing.
Oh, yes. I will always. I won't walk away from a game.
Scott
I won't
away.
Leave a stadium early. I will not turn a game off. When it stinks.
I walk away.
Scott walks away. And
not because I want to walk away.
No.
It's actually it's a responsibility.
it's for your health.
It's not a health thing. It's
superstition.
It's if the team's going to win.
Right. You can't be a part of this.
I can't be a part of it right now. So being a good fan, I walk away. I calm things down, and I don't watch anymore.
Scott also goes a step further. And he won't tune into the next game for a little while either.
And
he'll
it's a real
into
thing.
Like the second half.
It's a real thing.
He's that guy. Well,
and guess what?
It works?
Well, Tuesday kinda. I walked away. Yeah.
Okay.
Tell me.
Good. Yeah.
You
Good.
Tell me.
That's the thing Good. Is that I definitely know that Scott was watching that game, or we were watching it over here on the plaza,
right.
and we're doing our show, and we're watching the 0 for 21 unfold
goodness,
in front of us.
No kidding.
And then we just have to go, anyway, why don't we go ahead and talk about the Tennessee Titans pick up Julio Jones this week. Like, we were,
oh my
we
goodness, were like, right.
I mean, it was just, we're watching it, we're going, oh my gosh, and you don't want to say the Jazz are so terrible right now. I mean,
right.
You don't want to say it, but when I got home and I turned the thing on in the second half, it started up, I went, okay, something's different here, something's going on. There was an energy. Everybody talked about that second half defensive energy that really led to, I think that it led to everything turning around.
Mm-hmm.
It led to the Clippers being totally worn down. They were, you know, whatever their level of discomfort was mm-hmm. or fatigue of going, you know, that game seven and then having to turn around and come back to Utah. I don't buy that. They do 2 days of rest and go travel all year long.
Right.
And they're like, well, they had to be at
altitude.
At altitude.
Yeah,
I don't like the altitude.
Game seven.
Yes, I don't care. It's like, I know, it wears on you. It gets tiring. But these guys do this day in, day out.
Yes.
So what's the excuse tonight? Because – and how is it that the Jazz were able to turn that on? What's the second half? What's the halftime speech that makes it to where everybody ratchets up that energy?
I mean, I don't know if there is a specific halftime speech that does that. I think these guys on this Jazz team, we've seen it multiple times throughout this year where they just know. They know at halftime, guys, this isn't good enough. We have to be better. And Donovan was he was the image of that. On Tuesday night, and 16 points in the third quarter, 16 more in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was ridiculous. And when you play good defensively, Quinn says it all year long, and you just pointed it out, Alex. When you play good defensively, this Jazz team, it trickles over to the offensive side too. And you saw it playing off of Donovan's hot offensive side, going back to the defensive end, and Rudy dominating and altering shots and blocking shots, and they're stealing balls and creating turnovers. It just, everything started flooding in the right direction. And I think that's just how good this Jazz team is, that they can go suffer through an 0-for-20 stretch and still win. And if they can do that, imagine if they don't have an 0-for-20 stretch.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
you'd like to think that tonight would be, you know, a 15-20-point win. But
obviously you're not going to get the same. We're talking with Sarah Todd last segment, and she's like, yeah, I don't think Kawhi's going to be as flat. You know, you can't expect that their superstar is going to come out flat. And then she stopped there and moved right on, and I thought, oh, yeah, we kind of expect Paul George to be flat these days. Like, he just has not been – he's not been performing.
I don't know that I would expect
why
that.
Would you – like, why would you –
Because he's a good player, and he's gone so long without actually playing well.
And Joe Ingles said that he doesn't have this, like – off on the rivalry with him and Paul George. That was
he
was playing with the Thunder. Well, he said it was more of a Clippers Jazz thing more than it was he and Paul George specifically. But this is one of those where I'm like, yeah, I want to know if the Jazz can turn the corner here, because if they can get a game two win, it would be a lot different. It would be so much of a different feel from the last series going down to LA up 2-0. They need this game big time.
In Utah Jazz playoff history, 8 times they've started a best of 7 2-0, right? And all 8 times they've advanced.
Wow.
So, you can say what you want. They were up 3-1 last year and lost. You know, you can say what you want. And there's never a guaranteed moment where the series is over until game 4 is won, right? But historically speaking, it's a good situation to be in when you're up 2-0 in a best-of-7 series, whether you're the Jazz or not. So you have to know the Jazz know this. They know that defending home court, going 2-0 over the Clippers heading to L.A. is big time.
Huge.
Big time.
So Rudy Gobert, 3-time NBA Defensive Player of the Year. And the Jazz have a victory in that first game.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this team getting what kind of things would get this team laxed or overconfident? Because I think that's one of the challenges. Do you see that happening with this team in this series and even tonight?
Gosh, it's hard for me to see that happening with this team. And it goes. I still have the burned in my memory banks. Donovan's face. Early this season, and it might have been preseason still, when he was talking about it is unacceptable for them to lose, you know, that 3-1 lead to the Nuggets. It's unacceptable. It's not going to happen again. Not only that, but we have much bigger plans than even just a first-round win. And so I see that face and that confidence and that determination in Donovan's face, and I feel like I've seen that in every player on this team for the most part. I don't think there's ever been a moment this season where they've just kind of lollygagged into a game and been like, you know, and I know they've had some bad performances, but those were just off nights. It wasn't like they were out there just kind of throwing in the towel. You know, we can take it easy this night. I haven't seen that from this Jazz team this year, and I don't expect to see it.
I'll tell you one of the things I've seen. The intensity has picked up.
Yeah.
Like, I really wondered if the Jazz could...
It's playoff intensity, right?
Right, and I really wondered if the Jazz had that in them. That, you know, I was like, because you saw Derek Favors during the season, and he was playing at a certain level, and all of a sudden that level's gone up. Joe Ingles,
that's
has
a
gone
veteran
up.
Thing,
Jordan,
right?
Jordan Clarkson,
yeah, I think it is.
All of that has really intensified from the Jazz, and it's one of those pleasant surprises for me that I didn't, you know, because you're kind of like, okay, maybe the Jazz, their top level is just regular season,
right.
Best record, and they can't up their game in the playoffs, and you've seen that from this team.
There's one Jazz player I can think of in recent history that I never saw that increase in intensity. Gordon Hayward.
Oh yeah.
Ah.
And
just, you know,
did he play for the Jazz?
When they were in the playoffs during his time,
he was just here for like a
season.
I told you that somebody posted it. Was it you that posted your brother or posted that picture?
Yeah.
Somebody had a Gordon Hayward jersey, and instead of Hayward, it was Squidward.
From
SpongeBob. Yeah. On the back. That's how you get your most. Don't burn your jersey. Make it into something else. All right, Sam. Have fun over at the game.
Thanks.
Or at least do some work over the game, would you?
Crowd.
Jeez.
Yeah.
We'll take the break here. We'll come back. News traffic weather right now. We've got more to talk about right here on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us.
on a game two evening where the Jazz can take on the Clippers for a 2-0 lead in that Western Conference semifinal series. I'm not sure what to expect. It's always that anticipation, Scott. Which team's going to show up prepared? And last game, it was obviously not the Jazz in the first half.
Oh, I know what's going to happen.
Oh, Scott knows what's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's prediction time. Absolutely. We're going to get into it. We just had Sarah Todd from the Deseret News and then Sam Farnsworth from KSL 5 Television. We've weighed out all of the things that we've read today, all the things that we have discussed in our pre-show meetings. And it all comes down to right now. And so you can weigh in, 57500. That's the text number. You can give us your thoughts as to how this game is going to go with the Jazz and the Clippers. Game two across the street here at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Scott, you say you know how this thing is going to go. So give me an idea as to how game two is going to go for the Jazz and how they can win this game against the Clippers.
So we talked in the first segment with Sarah Todd, and she said, look, you're not going don't expect Kawhi Leonard to not play well.
Yeah.
And also don't expect the Jazz to shoot, you know,
so
and
poorly.
Miss 20 yeah. shots in a row. I don't think either one of those two is probable. It's just, you know, just look at the odds of things. So I really think actually both teams are going to play a lot better. I really just would not be surprised if this is a blowout. I know that's kind of crazy, but
Jazz blowout.
A Jazz blowout, yes.
So how does that happen? How does a blowout
here's how it happens. I think the Jazz – There are just a couple of things that I keep hearing. And the things that I keep hearing is we're tired. You know, we played this and we're at altitude and we had this quick turnover and we're tired. And I've heard this, you know, we're just fighting to keep it alive. And these are comments from the Clippers. And the Jazz, I really think a lot of the shooting for the Jazz is about getting in rhythm and getting that confidence. And when you take those days off, you take that time off, it's really hard for this Jazz team to just kind of get in a rhythm. They're a team that's better. They just get better and better in series, and they get better when they actually play. So I just sense that the Jazz will shoot better tonight. You're going to get a better game from Kawhi Leonard, but I just feel like this is going to be a night where everything just kind of clicks for the Jazz. They had the shots the other night. They're going to get the shots again tonight. You can expect that you're going to get a good shot from the Clippers. Like they're going to come out. They know their backs are against the wall, and they've got to steal this game. But I just think the Jazz just have too much in too many different places to lose, and I believe that Rudy Gobert actually, Alex, is going to play a bigger part.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that, you know, it was a lot of folks talking about how Kawhi wasn't playing very well. This is what Shaq said, right?
Right.
Kawhi didn't play well. Neither did Paul George. And when Kennard's leading your scoring, then you're not in a good place, and then the Jazz barely won that game still. There was the streak of shooting that wasn't great, obviously. It was terrible in the first quarter. But I'll tell you, too, Rudy Gobert was not an offensive threat. Remember what we said before the series?
Right.
Rudy Gobert, if he ends up being that pick and roll, if they aren't able to guard that pick and roll from him, he'll eat him alive, and he'll score 20 points. And instead it ended up being guys like Jordan Clarkson showing up, which he's done, you know, and he had a great second half, and Donovan Mitchell obviously taking over 32 points in the second half. I think that when you're able to look at Mike Conley being out, it doesn't worry me right now, not just because of the game the other night, but because the Clippers have had a hard time against the Jazz this season as a matchup. It's just not a good one for them. It's a bigger lineup. I mean, you saw it when Rudy blocked that three-pointer at the end of the game because he was out guarding the perimeter because, you know what? They don't have an inside threat, and they don't have somebody who's going to challenge him under the hoop. And so if they're able to really work that pick and roll – if Joe Ingles can come in again and do that leadership thing in the place of Mike Conley, I love that Boyan was like leading the huddles the other night during the game. That's like I love seeing that type of leadership. I wonder what Kawhi and Paul George are going to do. If Kawhi takes over, this game is still winnable. I mean, ask Donovan Mitchell what scoring 40-plus games did in the playoffs last year. It didn't necessarily equal a win. They were amazing performances, but you've got to have your team dialed up and you've got to have everything kind of going for you. If the Jazz are going to win this game against the LA Clippers tonight and go up 2-0 in this series, because the Clippers know getting down 2-0 on the Jazz is not an easy task to come back from. And so if they can do that, if they the way that they do it tonight is
Donovan Mitchell does not have to have 45 points. So prediction time for me. Donovan Mitchell's going to have fewer than 30 points, and the Jazz are going to win by double digits. And that's going to be a more they're going to hone in on Donovan Mitchell, and he's going to make them pay. Donovan Mitchell's going to make the Clippers pay tonight on a bunch of extra assists. He's going to find the big man underneath, Rudy Gobert. Derek Favors has been such a pleasant surprise, him coming in and doing the thing that he did in the playoffs, the reason you loved him so much in the first place. So I think that Donovan Mitchell gets they're going to key in on him so much that Donovan's going to start distributing that ball more. And so fewer than 30 points from Donovan tonight, but a double-digit win for the Jazz. Those are my predictions as well. By the end of the night, I'm gonna probably text you. I was lying about all that, man.
I didn't mean that stuff. I actually do. I really think the Jazz are gonna have a big game tonight, but I think you're gonna get that. You're gonna get that tough punch from the Clippers. I mean, Kawhi Leonard's a world champion. He understands this. He understands being down in series. You saw what he did in the past against the Mavericks and even throughout his career. So you just know that you're gonna get that from him. But what I really like about the Jazz with that first game against Memphis in the first round, I was like, this team does not seem like it's interested at all in playing playoff basketball. And you started to see this team really rise up and change its intensity across the board. And that was just – that's something as a fan you got to be excited about. And this team, this Jazz team is different. You can see it. You can see that they're focused. They're deep. They've got confidence, and they're finding ways to finish out series and win games, and that's what the NBA is all about.
Maybe you saw on social media the team posting that video of when Rudy got that Defensive Player of the Year award. They put it at his locker. He walked in, and then they all started throwing water on him. And it looks like the team. I know we don't expect these guys to be best friends, but doesn't it seem like this team? And Jordan Clarkson's talked about it. He's one of these guys that came in. Had a year, under his belt, essentially, after getting traded into the Jazz last year, halfway through. He's got like best buddies on the team. They love that. They love this team atmosphere. And Rudy was like, I love this team. I love these guys. And so do you think winning the Defensive Player of the Year is one of those things that's a benefit the day before a game like this, where you go, yeah, you know what? I am that guy, and go out and do it. Or is it one of those things where the other team goes, Defensive Player of the Year, huh? We're going to go right at you.
No, and that's what I was asking Sam. Could this be a distraction for a game or two? And I don't think so. I think people now have a clear understanding of the impact that Rudy Gobert has and their respect. And you see guys going to the basket and they go, nah, I'm not going to end up here. And enough guys have tried to challenge Rudy, and it just doesn't work. And he really understands where he belongs on a basketball court, and he's starting to own it. So I don't see that same letdown from Rudy that maybe would have happened a couple of years ago.
Hey, guess what we have coming up next? It's MVP time.
Oh yeah.
Or is it? Maybe we suddenly bust out a little something to go the opposite direction and call
something,
out
something.
Call out the ridiculousness across the world of sports, too. Maybe a they so poo poo coming up. Stay with us. More to go right here in KSL's Unrivaled.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell speaking, and Alex Keery over there silent. Don't worry, it won't last long. Alex has things to say, usually every segment. Hey, if you missed part of our show, don't worry. You can download the KSL Sports app for free and get our our show on podcast form, and then you don't miss a minute of it, and you can listen to it when, wherever, or however you'd like.
Boy, the Bucks are playing like their backs are against the wall, huh? I mean, they kind of are. I mean, it's not an elimination game, but they got the pants beat off of them so soundly by the Nets in those first two games. This thing's getting chippy in Milwaukee. Now, they've come back to Milwaukee for games three and four, obviously. In this game three, there's been some shoving. P.J. Tucker got in KD's face. I love it. This is playoff intensity. This is stuff that we signed up for, right? It's like, I want there to be some guys in each other's faces. I like guys getting separated, on the court. You don't need any punches being thrown. But, guys going at one another like absolutely hardcore,
you know, intensity in these games. I mean, there's a playoff like energy we were talking about before. I don't know how to describe it because the Jazz didn't have it. Maybe the whole Memphis series.
Yeah.
They had it. They had it like, you know. Sure,
they've upped their game. This,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Just that game one felt so much different than those other games, you know, against Memphis. Certainly game one against Memphis, you didn't know who that Jazz team was. Maybe I've asked you this before, but did you prepare differently for the playoffs or was it just like something you didn't talk about as a team? Like, you don't have to say get ready for the playoffs.
No, I think it's something you understand, and part of what it is it's there's a finality to it. Like if you lose, you go home; it's over. But it's also understanding that your legacy, how you're remembered, really happens in the playoffs, and so it's and I think a lot of these guys know: am I going to show up or am I going to hide and disappear in the moment? And that's what people remember, and that's how you know you're thought of. And so players that have that ability to rise up in the moment. I mean, you just saw Kevin Durant, you know, very calmly dribble down the court and just shoot a shot and make it.
Right.
And he's just so comfortable.
And you have
that.
Like a level of desperation right now from Giannis Antetokounmpo that he's playing out of his element. This is not his thing. You know, like this is not how he plays normally. He's definitely playing frantic. So that's never where you want to be in these situations. So,
And he seems to kind of fall short in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Paul George kind of falls short, too.
I mean, pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean, as soon as we say that, of course, he's going to have a great night. But, yes, Scott, one of the things that we do on this program periodically, we just try to keep in check some of the people that are you know, not doing the right thing. We try to highlight. We have way more MVPs, right? We do MVPs almost every night. It's very rare that we do this segment, but it is. It reflects the people who are not doing amazing things in the world of sports. It is our They So Poo-Poo segment brought to you by Tyler Huntley.
They So Poo-Poo.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Poo-poo, poo-poo. Everybody has to go poo-poo.
That's right, the people who absolutely. Is Mitchell singing it over there?
He's rolling his eyes and shaking his head. I don't know.
Every kid has to learn this song, Mitchell. It's not. Is it? We're doing a community service.
This is a PSA.
Don't mess around. This is. But it also is us pointing out bad behavior so we don't repeat it again, right, Scott? So that's kind of part of the MVP is to show how people doing amazing things, and then it's the same thing with They So Poo-Poo. Show some behavior, and in this way, it's negative reinforcement. We don't want people to act like this. Okay, so we're gonna point out the people who are acting they so poo poo, and then we're gonna go on from there. Do you want to go first, Scott? You want me to go?
I'll go first.
Okay, go ahead
if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
So my they so poo poo is John Rahm, Spanish golfer. He's like the third ranked player in the world.
Yes,
and he was winning the Memorial Jack Nicklaus, who's greatest golfer of all time. His tournament by 6 shots. So after the third round, he has a 6-shot lead, which for all intents and purposes, unless he just totally.
That's a W on Sunday.
It's a win. Yeah. And it was worth $1.67 million to John Rahm. And he was disqualified for getting sick, basically.
He got COVID. He tested positive for COVID.
He got COVID. And I understand that getting a shot is a personal choice. But when you're out in the public like this, when you're exposed to this, when your profession is on the line, and people are saying, well, it's not that big a deal because he's already made $4 million this year, but it's really
adding 1.7. I don't think he'd argue with that though.
Well, no, no one would, and I mean, you don't know how long your career is going to last, and I just think it was a very cavalier perspective.
Are you saying, he like owed it to his fellow golfers or people that are on the course?
100%, because okay, he has the virus, and now he's out there, and he's you know, high fiving people. He's, you know, he made some incredible shots. He's exposing himself to a lot of people in that situation, and you don't really know what's going to happen to those people. I mean, you know, they may get sick or worse. Who knows what's going to happen? And so it's really, I think it's a very careless and a very cavalier attitude to have about something that clearly is pretty serious and significant and can totally be avoided, right? It totally can be avoided. The worst thing I like in life, Alex, is getting a shot.
Yeah.
Hate them. Like when I went and got COVID tested, I mean, or I got my shots, yeah. I was like cold sweat. I was just like, because I do not like shots.
Yeah, I'm like that. I'm like that at doctor visits too. Yeah.
But I think it's a responsibility, and I think you should seriously take that responsibility when you're in a position like someone who's playing professional golf.
Yeah, it's not like a political position of like, let me tell you about, you have to get your vaccine and you have to tell all of us that you got your vaccine. It's more right. like, hey, in your case, where you're playing as a public figure, interacting with the public, and because they expect the patrons.
It's your livelihood too.
I mean,
you know, like I
family's
mean,
involved.
Why did
it,
I get? Yeah. I got my shot so I could come back in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that was
Scott. That's a good anti-MVP. They so poo poo. Yeah. John Rahm. I think he learned his lesson though by basically being fined $1.7 million.
Right.
I mean, that was essentially yeah. So you
a painful lesson. To
you
learn.
You could go at him, but the reality was he got hit pretty hard in the pocketbook. All right, my they so poo poo actually goes to Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, of course.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I like to call him the second place vote getter in the defensive player.
Was he
number
two?
Yes, he was, and I think it's very appropriate that you called him number two, considering that we're talking about they so poo poo. Because all day today, if you went on social media, all
you
heard
him the deuce,
the deuce. Stop. It's a family program, Scott. So
he's number two.
I know. But we are teaching kids the right thing to do. Wash your hands, flush everybody after you're done, kids. All right. So Mitchell's like, Mitchell, when you have kids, you got to figure it out, man. That's stuff you got to teach them. So
because they won't wash their hands.
They will not. You go get back in there. So the thing that I wanted to point out is that Rudy Gobert was not campaigning for this award. We all kind of campaigned for him,
yeah.
Right? But Ben Simmons was campaigning hard for this award all year. And Ben Simmons is the biggest sore loser on the planet. All he did was point out on social media, oh, I scored 42 points on the quote-unquote defensive player of the year, and I'm not even a scorer. He kept doing that. He kept doing it. And everybody said, he got robbed. Let me tell you what he got robbed was. Michael Jordan pushing off in a close game. That's getting robbed, right?
Tried to forget that one, but yes.
How about
good example.
How about this? Here's how this thing actually went. 100 writers and sports journalists and people inside the game were given a vote. 100 people. 85 of them voted first place for Rudy Gobert. There was like 13 for Ben Simmons and a couple more for, I don't know who, Anthony Davis. Is that a close deal? When it's that close.
That's a landslide.
If you win a basketball game by 38 points, do people go, man, we got robbed tonight, man, those refs. Nobody says that, Ben Simmons. Grow up. Take your rookie of the year that you robbed from Donovan Mitchell, and then take your medicine on this one. We're going to take the break here. Hey, keep your text rolling in. I'm going to read a couple more of these predictions for Game 2 of the Clippers and Jazz. Send them in, 57500. I'll read them on the air. You tell me how the Jazz are going to do against the Clippers tonight. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled News, Traffic, and Weather right now on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Carey, Scott Mitchell, second hour of the program. Thanks for being with us. Jazz about to tip off here, waiting for the end of this Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are down 1 point right now with 11 seconds left as the Bucks just went up by that point by making a nice little layup there with 11 seconds left. Boy, they need this one. I mean, the difference of getting this one, but KD's just been on fire tonight. I mean, Kevin Durant just makes anything he wants from the mid-range, Scott, and that's scary. And then I go, well, not trying to look too far ahead, Scott. How do the Jazz take on Kevin Durant? And you were just like, no, it's simple. He's not a three-point shooter. I mean, you're like confident the Jazz could beat
But you watch Milwaukee and everyone kind of stands around. It's isolation basketball.
Yeah.
The Jazz move the ball offensively, make it hard to defend. And they, you know, they get some really good looks because of that with 3-point shots. You know, the Jazz are going to win or lose this season.
That's a great point, Scott.
On
they
the,
lose,
their ability to hit shots from
well,
3-point.
Well, I just, I mean, and they own that. It's not like a, it's not a live or die by the 3-pointer thing. It's a, this is the style of basketball we play. That's it. That's the end of it. As Milwaukee looks like they're going to close this one out here with 2.8 left. They just got the rebound, the defensive rebound, and they might escape this one here and go up or get one at home here and be 1-2 in the series. All right, Scott, it's the 805 cut. You know what that means? We're going to talk a little bit about something else right now. It's going to be college football because this is not a drill, everybody. Things are starting to move in that direction of expanding the playoff. Let's do it.
The cut at 805. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Brought to you by Wasatch Medical Clinic. Struggling with ED, sick of pills? Visit wasatchmedicalclinic.com for a free offer. I do want to read a couple of these predictions we asked for via text, Scott. You ready for this? Jazz go into the halftime tied. I like this because it's very detailed. Okay. Jazz go into halftime tied. Down by 10 at the end of 3, win by 5. Like, that's down by 10 at the end of 3, that's nerve-wracking. But, hey, if they win by 5, then fine. What about the X factor for the Jazz? The winner of the Sixth Man of the Year award, yes. Not just winner of the Sixth Man of the Year, but also the second place Sixth Man of the Year with Joe Ingles as well. I think you're in good hands with all these guys on the team. All right. Scott, the thing I wanted to talk about was the college football playoff. It looks like the committee will consider expanding it. And that, you know what that means? What they're talking about is they're talking about it. So that's the movement we had today was they will talk about, they will consider this. And that also means that they could actually get out of the current situation now a year or two earlier than they, you know, than we thought they would have, and actually go to a. And what they're looking at is, according to these sources, is a 12-team playoff. Scott, that you and I have been pimping this entire time. We have been absolutely wanting this 12-team playoff. The thing is that here's what the setup was. Then we described this a little bit earlier in the week, and it was pipe dream then, and now it's already turned into we might go that direction. You have the automatic four that get in that are the top four teams in the country and conference champions on top of that. That hasn't changed because you're going to be those are who would have been in the college football playoff right. Anyway.
So basically, you're having what is more or less now.
Yes, absolutely. Now you add another P5 champion in there. So the next P5 champion, no matter their ranking, is that what I'm understanding? Like as long as they're a P5, as long as they're the P5 champion, if you're a P5, if you're one of the champions of those conferences, you go into this college football playoff. Now, they could figure out where they might rank you based off of where your actual ranking is, but that being said, if you're a champion of a Power 5 conference, you will absolutely end up in this playoff as well. After that, you have the G5 auto bid, which is the best group of five team. So from last year, it would have been your Coastal Carolina, Cincinnati. I mean, that's the group we're talking about there. So, and then you have, was it five? No, it's six at-large bids, which makes me excited. Now, based on the way that it is, we can actually tell you what the rankings would have looked like and who would have been in the college football playoff in the last couple of years. And it's kind of insane and really exciting to think that an expansion could be like that. Scott, well, you've been kind of the scientist on this.
I don't know about scientist here, but I mean, I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express. look, Arizona, Colorado, Western Michigan would have actually been in the playoffs under what they're proposing.
In the last couple of years.
In the last 7 years.
And, wait. Who are those teams again?
Arizona.
Okay, that's laughable.
Colorado.
Okay.
Western Michigan. And
the Broncos?
Coastal Carolina.
And Coastal Carolina.
Coastal Carolina.
So Coastal Carolina
had BYU beaten Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, that was their problem.
Then under this new program, and then BYU would have made it.
Now they ended their season 11th, but that doesn't. It was right. All about where they were going into that final.
So the reality is, as an independent under this program,
it's harder.
Well, no, there's a chance that BYU, I think, could actually get. You know, if they had a season like they did last year, again, they're probably going to have to be a team that goes undefeated. A lot of those, outlier programs, it's got to be an undefeated season.
You probably
to
have
even
to be,
get a look.
You've got to be a top 10 team.
The Boise State,
yes.
All those things. You're gonna have to do. You're gonna have to be extraordinary.
Who would
in order
been...
to make it? Here's what I don't like about
what
this
is it?
Right off the bat. It's still going to be about rankings.
Yeah,
and so
the human factor.
So
to it,
so
right?
What? Like, well, it's the human factor, but then it's also like, why have a hard schedule?
Yeah,
you know, we want to, you know, we still want to be an undefeated team going into it, and I just think that, you know, taking away some of that. You know, getting really good competitive non-conference games because why did everyone go to a challenging non-conference schedule? It was for the strength of schedule, right? It was to get bonus points when they were determining the rankings. And now it's like you just need to be ranked, you know. And I don't, you know, maybe they'll have the same system of ranking. I don't know. But I still don't like the ranking side of this, and I think it, you know, it still creates a lot of control that's arbitrary. But what you're getting is a realistic shot at a lot of people being able to play for a national championship.
Who would have been,
and I think people will feel a lot better about.
Well,
it.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about who the teams that would have been in last year with this metric. And maybe we'll even go back a couple years and kind of blow your mind as to who would have been in there. Does Utah make that list? Did BYU make that list from last year? We'll come back. We'll talk about it. 57500 is the text number. Give us your Jazz Clippers prediction here as they're about to fire up and tipping off right here across the street of Vivint Smart Home Arena in Game 2 in the Western Conference Semis. Taking the break, coming back right here next on KSL's Unrivaled.
It's just about time for the Jazz to tip off. We're moments away. This is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery. And, of course, we're across the street from Vivint here at Broadcast House, KSL Broadcast House.
Are they doing the jerseys with the, you know, the gradient color? Is that like the full? They used to mix it up like every game. I don't know what
I don't know.
I'm just telling you, they're just, I mean, they tell you what jerseys they do before the games. And when I was looking at the tickets, I think they're doing all of the, as Rudy accepts the, his third Defensive Player of the Year award at center court from Ryan Smith and Coach Quinn Snyder. That's
who cool. Ryan Smith and Quinn are both very average height individuals. And so he,
they're both like 6'2 or 6'3. Yeah.
But
no,
still he,
yeah, still he's a foot taller than both those guys. Yeah. So everybody over there with their orange, yellow, and red shirts in the arena, and excited about Game 2. Boy, they're pumped up, and having 18,000 fans makes a difference. And we're excited about this one tipping off on ESPN, and we'll keep you updated. And you can, of course, we'll get you that push when this game ends as to how things are going to go. We were talking about the college football playoff, and the possibility of it going to a 12-team playoff, which is where the committee has said they are going to talk more and at length about actually moving to a 12-team playoff system. You pointed out that Kirk Herbstreit from ESPN said, hey, this is long overdue, and it's a great move. It's a money move. If anybody's being – I mean, the reality is this is a massive money move for college football. It's absolutely a massive move to be able to make that money. And they should, because they're going to make more money, and they're going to have to pay the players pretty soon because of the name, image, likeness legislation you're going to see pushed through as well in the next few years. So guess what? This is a win for everybody, including you and I as observers of the game. And to go to a 12-team system with six champions from conferences or the G5, and then six at-large bids, what would that look like last year? Who would have made it into the college football 12-team playoff last year, Scott, based off of those qualifications here?
So you'd have Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma.
Which is where you were with the college football playoff.
It was
yes.
Notre Dame.
Oh, Notre Dame
Notre
was in.
Dame,
yes, yes, yes.
And Oklahoma was out. So.
And everybody knew Notre Dame shouldn't have been in there, so that's
right.
Good they corrected
but,
that.
But Notre Dame would have made
they
it.
They could. They yeah. absolutely should have, yes.
Texas A&M, Florida, Cincinnati, Georgia.
Did A&M and Florida play each other in a bowl, too? That was like a good bowl game, wasn't
yes.
it? Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Florida, Cincinnati.
Got it.
Who may have may have made some waves in that. They played Georgia very tough.
And they're going to be tough now, next season as well.
And then Iowa State, Indiana, and Coastal Carolina. So BYU beats Coastal Carolina.
They're in.
They're in the college playoffs.
That was the big killer for them. Yeah. That was the big killer for them. And they ended up having an amazing bowl game against Central Florida, and Zach Wilson had an amazing game, and it put him to 11-1 on the season. And Coastal Carolina, I think, lost to Liberty in their bowl game. But I think that in the end, you see that, I mean, if you list off those teams that you are going to see in any given tournament, let's talk about the college basketball tournament, right, March Madness, you're going to get some random teams, and you hope for random teams. That's what we want.
That's what makes it exciting.
And when I say random, I mean just like the non-traditional. Indiana, Iowa State.
Yeah,
we don't see those teams in this. And you know what? You don't normally go, oh man. But think about what that does for those fan bases, and for places to be able to go. We're in that 12-team playoff, and to have one or two of those teams sneak an upset right in that first round. So what would the first round look like? All four of those other teams get a bye, don't they?
The first four teams get a bye, and then it's kind of seeded, 5-12 and 6-11 and 7-8, or 7-10, and kind of bracketing. But here, so in 2019.
So then going back even further?
It's kind of interesting.
If you want to like really feel good about yourself, be like, dude, BYU in 2002, they probably would have been in, man.
Part of it, though, is a team like UCF where they just said, we're national champions. Remember when they claimed they put on the license plate, all this stuff?
Yeah, they put it on billboards
in Florida. What this does is it says, okay, we're going to find out. We're going to find out if you really are a contender or you really are a pretender. And I think there's going to come a time. There are going to be years when one of these teams, I think, surprises folks. I really do. I think there's enough talent around, and there's an opportunity for these teams to play. Anyway, so 2019, so the year before COVID, LSU, which had that phenomenal year, Joe Burrow was amazing, Ohio State, Clemson, and Oklahoma, right? So then you had Georgia.
Okay, and that was one that you thought, okay, they're on that cusp anyway.
And Oregon, who won the Pac-12. But Oregon doesn't get in as a champion because they're – They don't get the bye as a champion because they were like the 25th ranked team in the country. Now, had Utah actually beat Oregon in the Pac-12 championship, they would have been one of those teams. However, Utah still ended up in the playoffs under the program, and they would be the 11 seed. So you would actually have two Pac-12 teams in.
Who would they play?
In the playoffs.
Who would they play?
And here's the crazy part: they would play Oregon.
After they would have just lost to them,
they would actually.
See, now
play
that's when
again.
You have to go. Look, we're not doing that. That's garbage. We're not going to have them play
together
again.
That's part of why the whole ranking system kind of makes it a little bit, challenging. I would prefer to say automatic bids for every conference champion, and then have the at large, and the Power Five and. I just like that better. I just want to take it out of the hands of people speculating. I don't like the speculation.
So then how does the ranking go? The problem is that all the rankings are all subjective.
Highest ranked group of five champion automatic bid.
But see, there's no group of five champion. It's just highest ranked, right? Group of five teams.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it's the highest ranked.
Other teams just after that.
Well, yes, other teams, but there's an automatic bid for the Power Five conference.
Yeah,
so they're going to be in the mix somewhere. So this Oregon's a really good example. They were the Pac-12 champion, but they were 25 in the country, so they got in because
they were the conference champion.
Yeah,
boy, the Pac-12 representing big time that year in 2019.
So you look at it and you go, it'd be better if we had a higher ranked team lose. That way we get two teams into the college football playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be the debate going forward. Well, yeah, Utah now, they can't get two teams in the playoffs. You watch,
Okay, my question is this, and everybody who's listening who's from the South would ask the same question. Hey, man, how can my SEC get three teams in? How can we get three teams into the college football playoff, man?
Every year, in 2018, you have Alabama, there's one.
Okay.
Georgia's two.
Got it.
Florida's three. LSU is
four. Did they have four? They would have had four.
Okay.
How can I get five or six of my teams from the SEC in this thing, man?
LSU won. Not Clemson. Georgia 2, Florida 3. They only had 3 in 19. And in 20, Alabama 1, Texas A&M 2, Florida 3, Georgia 4. So they're going to have 3 to 4 teams a year from the SEC get in.
Would BYU still have won the national championship in 1984? That's what BYU fans need to know. I'm just kidding. Go back to 1984. Who made the college football fake playoff back then? No, come on. The thing is that this is still imperfect. The reality is that if you go back to even other – if you go to the FCS level, right, where they have a playoff, they still have to rank teams. They have to seed teams arbitrarily. They have to figure it out and go, who is it – where exactly are we seeing the difference here, you know, on these teams? And the difference is actually a lot bigger between those teams. Than you would think. You'd have a lot of teams that are like, hey, yeah, Weber State's really good, but some of these East Coast teams in the FCS might be a lot stronger, even though they're ranked a lot lower. So, did you just see Rudy Gobert's mom? Is it the game?
Yes.
Did they fly her out from France? Oh, my heavens. Corinne Gobert. Is that the game, Scott?
You're like a
Rudy's mom is there. Yeah.
You're like a hound dog just saw a squirrel.
Well, listen, this is this
in
is,
the middle of this like rather intense this conversation
yeah,
about
the college football. Rudy's mom is at the game. Rudy's mom.
And it was in a high pitched voice. Rudy's mom.
I just imagine like when the guy makes an announcement over the PA and someone translates it for into her ear. He said 2 minutes left.
Yeah. She goes, where is the soccer goal? I do not
understand.
Okay,
my guy.
No, Rudy was a boxer, by the way.
He was. Yeah. My guy, that reach is going to get you. My guy, Boyd Matheson, our guy, Inside Sources host on KSL News Radio.
Yes.
He texted me. I know it's a shocker. He texted me during this thing. Because it's a Jazz playoff game, so he's going to text. He texted me and said, hey, man, decent start because the Jazz went up 10-2 quick.
Right.
They were up 10-2 on Tuesday. And I mentioned that. I said, hey, they're up 10-2 on Tuesday. He goes, oh, so you're saying it's going to be 0-20 from here on out in this quarter? I said, no. And Donovan Mitchell made that so. It's 12-4 in favor of the Jazz right now. The Clippers not shooting exceptionally well. And the Jazz are playing, Scott, dare I say it, furious energetic defense right now, forcing some turnovers, getting hands in the lane. This is a good way to get this thing started. Hey, when we come back, we'll have a score update early on in this game too, as Donovan Mitchell has already hit 2 threes, has already got 8 points in this game as well. So we're going to take that break. We'll come back after news, traffic, and weather. We'll give you that score update, like I said, as Zubac just dunks over Rudy and gets the foul. I'm also going to roll out an NFL roundup for you. Just because that's part of our gig, man, we got to do it. NFL roundup. Stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled. The Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and
the other guy.
It's the Unrivaled NFL Roundup.
Oh. The debate in the studio here at KSL's Unrivaled is.
The pre-show and the post-show are much better.
Well, the thing is that Scott gets aggressive with his critiques, and that's fine. And the critique he gave me during the break was, look, we're going to be doing this segment. You know you're just going to be watching this game, though, during the segment. And listen. Guilty as charged, all right? Jazz up 22-14. Donovan Mitchell, I think, has 10 points in this first quarter already. Either way, Jordan Clarkson hit a step-back three that made my heart melt, you know? Sixth man of the year. Story of the night, though, Mademoiselle Gobert is in the stands. Yes, Rudy's mom is in the house, dude. You can't listen. I wasn't this excited about Karl Malone being in the crowd. Rudy's mom's there. This is a guy who gets hassled for being too sensitive, for crying about not making the All-Star team that 1 year. Mom shows up at the game, he's going to play hard. That's why I love that. Is Rudy's mom shows up, he's going to...
You think Ryan Smith got his mom tickets? Said, look, we'll get you tickets to this game.
Well, she is courtside. Yeah. I bet he.
Because Rudy's probably like.
Do they still fly the Concorde from Paris?
No,
I don't think they do. He put her on a jet. Got her out here. You got to put her in a Rudy jersey though. But she's a classy French woman. She's got like an actual outfit. She's got like a Coco Chanel outfit on.
What you need to do is you need a T-shirt that says, I'm Rudy Gobert's
mom. Rudy's
mom?
You know what? I would buy that T-shirt, too. I would buy that T-shirt. Absolutely. So far, if you're just joining us, breaking news, Rudy's mom is at the game.
If you didn't know.
And the Jazz are leading right now, 22-14 in the first quarter. All right. You heard the NFL Roundup music. That means that we're, of course, going to do the NFL Roundup. So, Scott, one of the things that I wanted to point out was, as we got going with this, Russell Wilson, I want to clear the air. My quarterback in Seattle, Russell Wilson, insisted he never asked for a trade. Yes, there were quote-unquote difficult conversations in the offseason, but he's always wanted to be in Seattle, and this is the place he's always wanted to finish his career.
I think Russell Wilson is that kind of guy, Alex. I really do. I was kind of surprised by this, but clearly his play at the end of the season was un-Russell Wilson like. I mean, you just saw all these turnovers and bad decisions, and in the past he was a guy that, boy, once he got out of the pocket, he was dangerous. He was a dangerous player. There may have been some truth to it on both sides. Like, I'm not buying that he's just totally innocent in this. And I think this is probably one of those things where, hey, we're trying to get this behind us. We're trying to, you know, we don't want the fans to go, yeah, gosh, he doesn't even want to be here kind of thing. And so I really think it's one of those things where it's like damage control for the future and mending fences.
When he said it, he goes, look, I've never asked for a trade. I believe him. You know, sometimes when players go, I've always been happy to be here, you're like, okay. But then you wouldn't necessarily believe him. I think Russell Wilson does want to be there, but it's got to be – no one wants to be – no one's going to say, yeah, we used to win, and now we don't anymore, and so I'm excited now to be here still for the rest of my career. That's not – no one's going to say that. Russell Wilson's like – I'm getting absolutely blasted in the backfield here. I'm one of the best quarterbacks I'm the best quarterback you've ever had in this city, and one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And if I don't get protection, I can't do this. You know, I can't do this. And it's not about like, well, he's requesting a trade. It's like, no, but now you kind of get where, you can kind of get where Aaron Rodgers comes from with that attitude where it's like, look, man, if you're not going to make me the priority, I can't keep doing this. I can't keep doing this. So I love that he said that he doesn't want to leave Seattle if he doesn't have to. Scott, you played in the World League. So this story has to do with you. Is Europe the next hotbed for the NFL? Now, they've been trying to get these games going in London. They've been trying to get these – every year they have these games that are being played across the pond. I think the Jets are actually going to London this year. But Germany apparently is a massive hotbed for professional football. And you played in Germany. I think you actually like went over – did you actually end up playing in Germany at one point?
Yeah, twice. Played an NFL preseason game in one year. And then
the NFL chooses those locations for a reason. They think it might be something that they could on top of.
Well, clearly. I mean, you're not – look, NFL regular season games are very important. Every game matters. Every game counts, which is great about football. I mean, that's – you know, because you just – it's amazing. The NFL would not spend the time, the energy to take a regular season NFL game, multiple season – games during the year and have it in another country if there was not a serious interest or a way to expand. I think the NFL is going, how in the world are these sports like tennis and golf and auto racing and soccer so much more profitable, but also so much more popular? And that really for us to expand, we may have maxed out our potential here. And I don't understand why they don't go into Canada. and kind of work there, or maybe even Mexico.
I think it's one of those. Well, Mexico, they've definitely tried. They've definitely tried to figure it out. The last couple of games have been canceled, I think, in Mexico. One was for the field, and the other was just I think it was just a COVID.
It's just logistically, it's a lot easier. But, you know, maybe there's just more money, and maybe there's more interest from, you know, over in Europe. I don't know. But clearly, they wouldn't be doing this if they didn't if it wasn't of value. I know when I went to Germany, Alex, it was insane.
I just feel like you can't have I feel like you can't have a franchise that far away from the United States.
No.
Even in London. You think, oh, yeah, look, this. I mean, could you imagine a London team? They would have to be based here for half of the year, and then their other eight games would have to be played, like, with everybody else coming out one off, you know. And that many teams traveling to Europe is a massive problem. You know, it'd be a logistical nightmare. But that being said, Scott, Tim Tebow won't get an actual real look until training camp. The mini camps are apparently not going to be the place where he's going to be able to try to prove himself. But Tim Tebow, you and I both saw a picture of him.
Well, no one won anything in a mini camp.
No, I know.
Everyone looks good in shorts, just so you know. Actually, some guys don't.
I was going to say, I don't really, especially with just a helmet on and shorts.
It was a fascinating thing that was consistent throughout my entire career. You'd be in these mini camps, you'd be in shorts.
Oh, he looks good.
And you go, man, this guy's amazing.
Look how high he jumps.
The minute you put pads on, and a guy just disappeared. So he just, it was just like, and then some guys you go, whoa, where did he come from?
Why? What was it?
They're just football players. Or they're not.
Or they're not.
And the contact, the physicalness of it, the reality, some guys show up and some guys disappear.
Update to Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott. He says, quote, my injury is behind me. So that's a bold thing to say for such a devastating injury and not being that far removed from it. This is one that's going to follow you around for quite some time. Even if you say it's behind you, it doesn't need to define you, but it is going to be something that everybody is going to bring up probably the rest of your career.
I think it's Zach
Wilson Prescott.
He's a guy to me that it scares me. That injury, that is a serious injury, and maybe he'll come back from it. But you know, everyone's like, oh, he's full go, and he's just, you know, it's incredible. And it's like, yeah, well, let's see. Like we said, when they get pads on and the season really starts, where is he? Because they have sunk a lot into a guy that had a massive injury.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back. Jazz up 24-22 as the Clippers are chipping away. Both teams shooting pretty good early on here from the field as Jordan Clarkson hits another one, 26-22. Jazz leading right now with 1:24 left in the first quarter. We'll take our break here. Two-minute drill next, wrapping things up right here on KSL News Radio.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery here. One of the fun things I did in high school on game day, because it's game day today, right?
Yeah, man.
Is you wore your jersey.
Oh, that was the big indicator, right?
Kind of, but in football season.
Yeah.
But then basketball season, you had to dress up. So you had to wear a suit and tie and all that stuff. I think I'm going to start.
We wore the singlet on wrestling
season.
No, come on.
That would be quite a statement.
You wore the headgear and the singlet to go to physics class?
Yeah, boy.
That's what you wanted, that heavyweight. You want that heavyweight sitting
down. I wouldn't
down
wear
in
the
chair.
The singlet in like the dark alone.
I'm telling you, it's one of those things you have to get past for sure.
Oh, I couldn't get past that.
It was. You know what's bad too? So I was on a – our team colors were purple, silver, and black. And so we had purple singlets. So I'm wearing a purple onesie and going out.
You're Barney the Dinosaur is what you are.
Did I tell you about the my wrestling career is hilarious. It's terrible. I have two uncles that were national champions and amazing. And I had this pedigree, and I didn't follow it.
I would go and watch you wrestle. I think that would be – I just think it would be funny. Now that I know it's a purple singlet, that even makes it better.
Yeah,
I could totally do that.
Yeah, the old cauliflower ear.
Yeah.
Is that on the diet plan? Can we eat the cauliflower ear? Gross. But yeah, I liked the football jersey was special.
That was a cool thing. There, yeah,
and you see somebody else in the hallway, and you're kind of like, and there were kids. There were kids at our school too that I was like, we had the Van Campen twins, and I knew they didn't play, but they wore that jersey on game day, and it was like. Those guys, man, they're wearing that thing with pride, and I loved it. So, yeah, I know. Yeah. I noticed you wore your Jazz hat. That was your
But
where's the Mitchell jersey, bro?
Well, I know. That's what I realized. I put the hat on. I got out of my car in the parking lot. I'm like, no. Wait a minute.
Because you have the Mitchell jersey.
I need to start wearing my jersey.
You have the Mitchell. Is it the yellow one, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, keep that on the shelf. That's bad luck. The yellow ones are bad luck.
Are they bad luck?
If they're wearing the yellow ones,
all I know is it was a Houston series. And
yes,
and I went and we got murdered. And it was bad.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, those yellow jerseys have a bit of a record. But I will say this also: I don't think you start wearing the Jazz jersey to work until it's at least the conference finals. You can't do it every.
Well, why not?
I have Jazz.
I mean,
why
not just wear it if it's game day?
I know.
I just wear it all the time.
You know what? Let's do it. I've got some Jazz gear. Let's start wearing them on game day. Yeah. Scott, you know what the time of the show is right now?
I do. I'm very well aware of this.
It's a special time of the program where we play this music. And Scott explains how we lock the show out every night. What do we do, Scott?
Well, late in the football game, you got to go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown. Don't have a lot of time, so you got to hurry. Your show's the same way. Got a lot to talk about, not a lot of time. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show. Go home happy with the trophy because everyone gets a trophy because we participate. It's not about competing anymore. It's about participating. And we don't have to wear a mask anymore because we've been fully vaccinated, qualifies us for a Krispy Kreme donut.
Now, the work hasn't signed off on wearing the singlet to work yet, though. I was disappointed in that.
That's an HR violation.
Everyone goes, hey, when can we not wear masks in the office together? Well, have you been vaccinated? And then I show up and I go, when can I start wearing this again? Hold up the singlet. That was never allowed, buddy. All right. First up on the two-minute drill here, Scott, one thing that I was looking forward to was maybe the NBA shifting that having the time shift on the season, giving a look at that. And the NBA is going to plan to go back to that October start date this year. And it's a little disappointing because I like this time frame. I know for the Olympics this year, it throws things off just a little bit. But have an 82-game season. Have this thing finish in August. So that football season, Scott, it would be all figured out for us.
Yeah.
Have basketball season start in December, go through here. We get done in August with the finals, and then football season's up, and then here we are. And we don't have to worry about the downtime. But they're going to go back to October. If you want to compete with the NFL, fine. Fine.
Yeah, I feel like I just really like that start around Christmas. It just feels to me more like basketball. I can't get into basketball in October.
No,
I just can't do it.
No.
It's just like, yeah. Any basketball starting before January to me is like it's exhibition basketball. I don't care what it is. It's just
college,
it's just
pros,
anything.
Yeah.
Any of it. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, this is like the holiday tournament time. It's just not basketball to me.
Well, so they're gonna go back to it, and I thought, well, this was your shot. You could have said, well, COVID, so we shifted our schedule. But no, that's not the case. Juwan Howard, you know, he was the guy who he's been head coach of Michigan, former part of the Fab Five, of course, at Michigan. Great pro career, and then he came back to coach his alma mater, and they did awesome this year. This was, I think they went to the Elite Eight, and he turned down the NBA, an NBA gig, to stay at Michigan. I think that college coaches genuinely – I think they have more fun, don't you? Like
that's what it
felt
like. They
can run the program a little bit more. This is a kind of Mark Pope kind of shows us. Oh, they get to run the show a lot more than the NBA coaches certainly do.
And it's almost like in the NFL, guys are like super motivated, and in the NBA, it's like we're on a cruise boat mode, you know. And there's maybe a few teams, but it just seems like a lot of players are kind of prima donnas. It's a very isolated individual, how many minutes, you know, how many points am I scoring a game kind of thing. But college basketball has that like feeling, and Michigan has been a decent program
through, and
when you first brought this up, the first thing that came to my mind was Juwan Howard seemed really happy, just seemed like he really enjoyed
Michigan was underperforming, and then this guy comes in. He's already a legend,
and he made them good very quickly. So I think this is, I think it's a cool thing. Plus, guess what? You get paid a crap ton nowadays.
You really do. And the thing about the NBA, it's a pretty grueling schedule, and you're hoping that you're able to put together a good basketball team, where you're a guy and you can go out and recruit and get the players you want, and you don't have to wait and hope for a ping pong ball, you know, to get that one elite player that can really make you a successful franchise in the NBA. And so I'd probably stay there too.
I mean, look, if you can make $5 million a year and you can have total control over it, it seems like a good deal. Hey, your Detroit Lions, Scott, looks like they're trying to land Todd Gurley. Now, this is a guy who had a struggle of a go, obviously, you know, in L.A. And they're trying to get Todd Gurley. And I'm wondering if they already picked up in the offseason Jamal Williams, right? And so you think to yourself, okay, what are they going to do here? The thing now is, though, they like bringing in that two-back. The two-back deal is kind of a formula that they've been using, especially, I mean, it worked for Jamal when he was there with it with not Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it was with Aaron Rodgers, but it was the other guy, Aaron.
We know who he is. I want to say Brown.
I'm blanking right here. Yeah. I can see his face. But I just am. I think that.
Was it Jerome Bettis?
No, don't say Jerome Bettis. Come on. No.
Was it Emmett Smith?
No, it wasn't any of the guys you played with, okay, buddy.
Marshall Faulk.
I was going to ask you, is it smart to like do the thing now? Where they running backs aren't that important.
They aren't. It doesn't matter.
It's terrible.
So running back by committee, when you can get a fresh guy in there or a change of pace guy, you get this hard nose pounded out, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and then you get a scat back. Boom, boom, boom. Gets around the edge. That's a good change up for an offense to give. You know, it's like throwing curveballs and fastballs at batters. You know, it just,
you don't see a lot of this these days now, like that workhorse back. You know, that's like taking 31 carries a game for 114 yards.
I mean, you see Derrick Henry, and that, you know, maybe
and he's built like a truck, so that like it actually could work for him, because
Saquon Barkley is
there's no Emmitt Smith anymore. Nope. I think that all-time rushing record may be safe, just because teams aren't going to hand the ball off that much anymore. It's like wins in Major League Baseball for pitchers. You're never going to see, they do it different now. You're never going to see people pass those up. All right, for Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. Go Jazz! We will be back again tomorrow. Scott's going to be out of town. Mitch Harper going to join me right here on the program, host of Cougar Sports Saturday. Lots of BYU talk while you're out of town there. Scott, safe travels there, buddy.
Good luck with that.
All right.
Talk, too.
It's going to be easier. Are you kidding? I don't have to have somebody pushing back at me all the time. All right. For Scott and Alex, we'll see you next time, everybody.
KSL-FM Midvale.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.